This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the hour, solar cells and better batteries, but first, ethanol. There is a headlong rush now to convert our gas-fueled cars to supposedly cleaner-burning corn-fed ethanol ones in the form of E85. That means 85% ethanol, 15% gasoline. It's been pointed out as a way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions while at the same time reducing our use of foreign oil. And since ethanol can be made from corn, something the country has a lot of, ethanol-boosting policies have been very popular with farmers, a powerful lobbying force in Washington. But this week, a new study published in the journal Environmental Science and Technology says that switching over to ethanol isn't without its potential risks, risks that could increase asthma, ozone exposure, and even more deaths. Joining us now to talk about the study is one of its authors, Mark Jacobson. He's co-founder and director of the Atmosphere Energy Program and an associate professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Stanford University. He joins us by phone from a conference in Rhode Island. Welcome to the program, Dr. Jacobson.
Thank you, Ira.
How did you get interested in researching this?
Well, I've been working for about 18 years on developing air pollution and weather forecasts and climate models, and I've been looking at other types of fuels and how they compare with gasoline or diesel and also different energy sources. So I'd run previous simulations, and this was actually just a natural extension of previous work I did. Because of the large expansion of ethanol, I thought it would be prudent to look at what its possible effects, because previous introductions of chemicals in the environment had not been tested, such as tetraethylene, gasoline, DDT, MTBE, dioxins, chlorofluorocarbons, they had detrimental effects and had to be banned. And so it was important to at least look at this, even though it wasn't certain whether it would be good or bad.
So you wanted to get a jump start on what might happen if we had the E85 as part of our economy.
Correct.
And what did you find?
So I looked at two scenarios. Well, one was a future scenario of 2020. What would happen if we converted all the gasoline vehicles to E85? And we also looked at a present scenario, which would be less likely since most vehicles today can't run on E85, but we still ran that simulation. So the future scenario, we found that what would happen is that you'd get an increase, or you might get an increase, in ozone in places like Los Angeles and the Northeast U.S., and actually over most of the U.S., but a decrease, a slight decrease over the Southeast U.S. And we also looked at the change of cancer rates. Well, gasoline emits two carcinogens that are important, benzene and butadiene, and these would be decreased. E85 increases two other carcinogens, acetaldehyde and formaldehyde, but each of these carcinogens has different toxicities, and we looked at not only their evolution in the atmosphere once they're emitted and how they're removed, but then looked at the population-weighted exposure and applied the carcinogenicity factors and found in terms of cancer there wasn't much of a difference. But in terms of ozone, there was a net ozone increase population-weighted over the U.S. And then we applied epidemiological data for ozone hospitalizations, asthma attacks, and increased mortality and found there would be a slight increase in the death rate. Just to give you an order of magnitude, it's about 200 people per year compared with the current 200 people per year, in addition to the current or projected about 10,000 people per year from gasoline vehicles, so maybe 10,200 people per year total. But there is some uncertainty in that. But what we can conclude with much certainty, is that it's unlikely that E85 will improve air pollution. Mm-hmm. And this is what this claim that E85 will improve air pollution has been used quite a bit. To argue for more subsidies and more expansion of E85.
It's been called the clean burning alternative.
Correct,
right?
Yes. In fact, if you look in the online dictionaries, it even defines ethanol as a cleaning the air, improves air pollution.
And your research shows that it may not make it any better. It's going to be about equal, possibly worse a little bit on the health side.
Correct. And this is really an issue because the question is, if we really want to move forward and develop energy independence and also address climate change, the question is, well, is this the best way to go about it? But because there are other technologies such as battery electric vehicles, where the electricity is obtained from wind, solar, hydroelectric, geothermal, wave, and tidal power, and hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, where you get the hydrogen produced in the same way, that emit no pollutants, in fact, would cause zero deaths instead of the 10,000 deaths that would be projected from gasoline or E85. Mm-hmm. And those technologies would also eliminate 98% of all carbon, compared with, which is relevant to greenhouse warming, global warming, compared to the latest study on the corn, the carbon balance for corn ethanol, is from UC Davis, is about a 2% difference in net carbon if you look at the whole life cycle analysis of carbon between gasoline and ethanol. Mm. So, would we rather have a technology that eliminates 50 times more carbon and eliminates all death and mortality as we know it from air pollution in the United States? And also, by the way, in that case of generating the electricity for battery electric vehicles from wind power would require 1/30th the land area that is required for growing corn ethanol to replace the same amount of vehicles in the U.S.
So you've really thought this through.
Oh, this is my job. I've been working on this for quite a while.
Hmm. Where would the smog be coming from? From out of the tailpipe, combining the gases out of the tailpipe, combining with the sun like it does normally to produce the smog?
Yeah. So the ozone, it's not emitted from the tailpipe. And by the way, I should clarify that the ozone we're talking about is ground level ozone, mm-hmm. as opposed to the ozone in the upper atmosphere, which is good for us because it filters out ultraviolet radiation that would otherwise cause skin cancer. But this ground-level ozone is very corrosive. It breaks down rubber, it corrodes statues and buildings, and it damages our lungs in a similar manner. And it causes respiratory illness and asthma, and complications from these illnesses cause increased mortality. But the ozone is not emitted. So this is why this study is different from previous studies, where previous studies had looked at E85 versus gasoline. Really all they looked at was the difference in the emissions from the two, but didn't look at, well, what's the effect on ozone, or couldn't calculate that because you need a three-dimensional model of the whole United States to do this. Mm-hmm. But they just looked at emission differences and just guessed what would happen. Well, in fact, you get different results depending on where you are in the United States. So just looking at, you know, one test case and then extrapolating through the whole U.S. isn't really not going to give you the right answer. Mm-hmm. But what happens is that the emissions from gasoline and E85, both of them emit what are called oxides of nitrogen, and also both emit organic gases. Well, the E85 is emitting slightly more organic gases. It's slightly less oxides of nitrogen than gasoline. Now, it turns out in a place like Los Angeles that either an increase in organic gases or a decrease in oxides of nitrogen increases ozone. And that and that's also the same case in the Northeast and actually a lot of the U.S. But in the Southeast, where you have lots of natural vegetation, an increase in the organic gases doesn't change the total organic gas amount very much, and so you don't get much of an an increase of ozone. And also in the Southeast, you have relatively lower oxides of nitrogen. So under those conditions, a decrease in oxides of nitrogen with E85 would actually decrease the ozone. So that's why you get a slight decrease there.
Mm-hmm. But it would be hit harder in places like Los Angeles.
Yeah, so you get a greater death rate in Los Angeles, increased death rate and hospitalization rate there in the Northeast, but a slight decrease in the Southeast.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you could clamp on to the tailpipe that might take out, you know, these emissions?
Well, so the scenarios I mentioned that we looked at a present-day scenario and a future scenario. So the future scenario assumed a significant reduction in tailpipe emissions due to improved technologies. When I say significant, on the order of about 60%, which is projected by not only the California Air Resources Board, but also researchers at Argonne National Laboratory. So we did account for improvements that would result from regulations to improve air quality. But the thing is, both gasoline and E85 will improve, and so it's unlikely you're going to get much more of an improvement from one versus the other.
Did you look at comparing it to diesel or biodiesel?
We didn't do that comparison, so I can't say specifically what the effect is. I can just report basically what other studies have reported on this.
And what have they reported?
Well, when you're looking at biodiesel, you're comparing it mostly to diesel because diesel is used in trucks, and you'd probably use biodiesel rather than ethanol in trucks. Mm-hmm. And so one study showed that in the case of biodiesel, it would reduce particulate matter and hydrocarbons relative to regular diesel, but it would increase oxides of nitrogen in that case. But the difference is that diesel puts out about 8 to 10 times more oxides of nitrogen than gasoline cars. So we'd be increasing oxides of nitrogen by, in addition to that 8 to 10 times more NOx, which is called, than diesel, you're increasing it even further with biodiesel. But you are decreasing other things. I don't know what the net effect of that would be on ozone. There also, the study at UC Davis looked at the carbon balance between biodiesel and diesel. And what it found was that biodiesel produced from soy actually produced, again in a life cycle analysis, about 50% more carbon than regular diesel in the life cycle analysis. Remember, ethanol was producing only 2% difference in carbon between gasoline, but diesel is actually, and biodiesel is actually enhancing the carbon balance, or carbon emissions on average relative to regular diesel. But I think because of the particles in both cases are so bad, I mean, diesel particles are significantly emitted in significantly more quantity than in gasoline vehicles. And even though you're reducing those particles in biodiesel vehicles, they're still significant. And those are the most deadly components of air pollution.
Yeah.
So both are, again, damaging.
So your message is let's rethink ethanol and go with alternative electrical, a plug-in society.
Correct. That is the wave of the future. I think, just to give an example, if we wanted to convert all the vehicles to battery electric vehicles in the United States, we'd need between 70,000 to 120,000 5-megawatt wind turbines if we did it with wind. Now, how much land and how difficult is that? Well, remember in World War II, in a period of 7 years, we produced 300,000 airplanes. So producing 100,000 5-megawatt wind turbines with much better technology today than they had back then should really not be a difficult thing. And this would be to run all the vehicles, all the passenger vehicles in the U.S.
Thank you, Dr. Jacobson, for taking time to be with us. We'll be right back after this break to talk about electricity again and plug-in societies and all kinds of stuff like that. So stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.